This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 69, American Ninja.
Yes, this is the great 1985 American Ninja starring the dude, Michael Dudikoff. Mm. And this is not to be confused with American Ninja Warrior, which is that...
an awful reality show where various contestants compete to scale, I guess it's something that would be right out of a playground.
Yeah, it's like American Gladiator type thing, it's some stupid obstacle course.
Yes.
And test her metal, I guess.
Well, we tested her metal by sitting through this thing, and this is another wacky production by Canon.
Oh.
And this was one of my absolute favorites as a kid,
because
I love the cover art, and it just goes to show how your aesthetic, preferences change over time. But this thing I thought was the, action movie par excellence.
Well, I mean, first of all,
classic of all time.
I just want to ask you, is there anything cooler than a ninja in this world? I mean, the ninja is the coolest thing ever. There's something about, that
stealthy figure,
that amazing mask. That outfit and, the shuriken, the nunchucks, and all the different...
I was a ninja many times for Halloween.
Yeah, hey man, there's a store, I don't know if it's still there, it's on Yonge Street, which is the world's longest street for those that, aren't...
In Toronto.
And it's called Warriors. Is it still there?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they actually sold ninja costumes and ninja weapons, and as a child...
Because that's so hard to make. To cover yourself in black.
Well, I mean, but I have a pair of nunchucks. I actually bought it on the black market. Mm. I'm not going to say anything more about that. But anyway, this store, I would go down there as a kid with my parents, and I wanted them to buy me a ninja outfit. And I wanted them to buy me, shurikens and ninja stars and nunchucks. I mean, the ninja was, the absolute be-all and end-all. And Canon, good old Canon, I mean, they know how to capitalize on everything. And, I mean, they, in the 1980s, they capitalized on this ninja craze, but good. I mean, first of all, in 1980, they made a movie called Enter the Ninja. And this was starring, it was basically a ninja trilogy, okay? The movies were not related in any way, except for the fact they were about ninjas, and they all starred Shou Kazugi, okay? And so there was 1980s Enter the Ninja, which had an Italian actor, spaghetti western actor, Franco Nero, Franco Nero, as a ninja, okay? Big successor canon. 2 years later, they come out with Revenge of the Ninja. At this point, Shou Kazugi is now the lead. So, that was in 82. In 84, we get one of my absolute favorite canon films, bar none, the batshit insane Ninja 3 The Domination.
Oh, with the female ninja.
With the female ninja. This is like a cross between, ninja movies and, The Exorcist, Unfortunately, the female ninja didn't really strike a chord with the populace. So they had to, kind of shift gears. So the next year, they decide to...
get someone else with no martial arts experience?
Well, that too. But, they figured, they were going to go with, sort of your all-American kind of, blonde... blue-eyed,
squinty badass,
American Ninja. Now, before that, amazingly, I think we've talked this before when we talked about canon. I mean, it's always about the two Chucks, right? Your Chuck Norris and your
Charles Bronson.
Charles Bronson. Yeah. They wanted Chuck Norris to play the lead in American Ninja,
which would have made sense. Yeah,
yeah. Norris said no. The reason why he declined the role was because he didn't want his face hidden on camera.
Hmm.
I mean, how egotistical can you be? I mean, at the end of this movie, this guy, this American ninja, like, he doesn't even put on a ninja mask until, like, the last
10 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
But Chuck Norris did not want to wear a mask for 10 minutes. So they had to find somebody brand new, and they auditioned, like, 400 actors, okay? And when Menachem Golan saw the headshot of this unknown actor, Michael Dudikoff, who, as you mentioned, had absolutely zero martial arts training whatsoever, he looked at him and said, "This man is the new James Dean, right? Get me the Dudikoff." We have this guy, Michael Dudikoff, zero martial arts training experience whatsoever.
Playing. He has zero acting chops.
That too, but that's okay, because, you know, he wanted that sort of, like, squinty, strong, but silent.
Yeah, stoic, laconic guy who just stands there and just looks at you askance. And, yeah, he's sort of a throwback to the Western kind of guys. Yeah. Just, you know, John Wayne wasn't much of an actor. Not that I'm comparing the two, but stand there and look cool.
As good as Clint Eastwood was in the Sergio Leone movies. I mean, as a man with no name, I mean, it was more his presence as opposed to his acting.
Yeah,
right?
True.
Now, Michael Dudikoff doesn't have much presence either.
No.
But, I mean, this is...
Or much stature either.
No,
at least,
no.
You know, Clint's a big tall guy with a strong jaw. Like, Dudikoff is just sort of... Yeah. It's like a California surfer guy.
But I guess, I mean, when you consider, you know, again, like, you know, the genesis of canon, and, you know, these two Israelis, you know, Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus, and, I mean, they have this...
Yeah,
idea.
Seeing American culture through their weird, like, Israeli prism.
You got it,
just,
right?
Yeah.
So they see this blonde, blue-eyed, you know...
Goy.
Exactly. They're like, oh, this is the man. So he became the American ninja.
Mm-hmm.
This film, I mean, it's no secret that I love canon. I can count on, like, one hand the amount of canon films that did not satisfy me. They're just amazing films. This is an example, like, if you want, you know, of why canon is so incredible, you know?
Yeah.
The movie starts off with this horrific trumpet theme.
Yeah, really horrible. And also, I guess we just podcasted Birdemic.
Yeah.
When you talk about, like, an interminable sequence of cars driving,
mm-hmm.
like this thing as well, I was looking at my watch just going, holy shit, like 9 minutes have gone by and there's a stupid convoy driving through the jungle to the tune of this awful, like, trumpeting.
You're just
and I
dissonant,
thought,
man.
Would someone just would do something to, like, you know, get me out of this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Miles Davis was experimental,
yeah.
you know, but I mean, he was never as dissonant as this. I mean, this was, like, really, really bad. And, like, a lot of our favorite films, this was lensed in the...
Philippines.
So there you go, you know?
Favorite, obviously, of all the women in prison movies, and the great Sergio Santiago, and the TNT Jacksons, and your firecrackers, all this crap. You can go there, and it's like a multi-purpose jungle. It can sub for absolutely any locale.
Mm-hmm.
So just, they'll work for cheap. Government was... vaguely fascist, but amenable to any sort of production that would land on their shores. You could just go there, and that's what they did.
So right now, we got two credits going. We got a Canon production, mm-hmm. lens in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So right away...
Right away, we know we're in for something big.
We're in for something fantastic.
And now, finally, something happens to this convoy, right?
Right. Well, the convoy, what is... We got to describe the precious cargo, and that is the colonel's daughter.
Who happens to be very attractive.
Yeah.
Of course.
So they have to ferry her from the army base in the Philippines to some other location. For
who knows
some
what? Yeah,
whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway,
I don't know.
All of a sudden we see...
a roadblock. Yeah. And so they stop and they just figure this is some sort of bureaucratic formality. They're mm-hmm. out in the middle of nowhere. But all of a sudden
the ninja emerges from the bushes.
Yeah, and a bunch of M16 wielding guys just spring forth from the jungle and set upon these guys driving the convoy, and they're just ambushed right in the middle of nowhere, and they're asked to get out of their vehicles, and they're shaken down.
Yeah, and then they're also ambushed by about 10-12 ninjas, and they're just like
leaping out of the jungle.
It's a fucking bloodbath, right?
Yeah.
However, they have
the reticent.
Stoic.
The ass-kicking.
The ass-kicking.
Michael Dudikoff,
who is Joe.
Yeah, Joe Armstrong, which isn't that the name of the singer in Green Day?
Billy Joe Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
Close enough, though.
Close enough.
It's like we talked about Clint Eastwood being, like, you know, he's a man with no name. I mean, this is a man with no past, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sort of like he's this amnesiac with, like, no birth records. Nobody knows, you know, where it came from, what he's...
This is a trope in wrestling where someone hails from parts unknown. But it's always bugged me about that, because how does the Wrestling Federation hire him? Because he has to have like a social security number. So you have to have a place of birth. And it's the same with the Army. They don't just take a guy whose past is so nebulous that he has no like ID. Essentially, if you don't know where you were born and you have no conception of what's happened to you for the first 20 years of your life, like, how can you be hired anywhere, especially by the Army, who would vet him for such things?
Well, yeah, apparently he was in the Army because it was some sort of, like, plea bargain.
Yeah, he was in reform school.
Delinquency, and yeah. Elvis has either go to jail or enlist, so there he is.
He's got an incredible backstory.
You know, so the dude, we call him the dude, yeah. This is Dudikoff. I mean, he just, you know, starts doing his ass kickery, which is quite inept. But
it was pretty incredible, because the arrows start to rain down on this poor GIs who get skewered and eviscerated by a combination of the Filipino army guys and the ninjas, and arrows get shot at him, and he deflects them with a shovel, and he catches one at one point, snaps it in half, and then I guess the leader of the ninjas says, "He possessed great skills."
That was great, because I mean, I love it. I mean, that's a cliche. Yeah. You know? He possessed great skills. And in my mind, I'm thinking, what?
Yeah, well, he did, I guess, possess great skill, because he was able to, despite being ambushed by 30 guys, 20 of whom have machine guns, 10 of whom are ninjas with, you know, bows and arrows and samurai swords, he manages to grab the colonel's daughter and absconds with her into the bush colonel, without being found.
And then we get the fucking cliche, I can take care of myself, leave me alone.
I can take care of myself.
And this is hilarious, because, I mean, you know, right away my mind is going back to, like, Land of Doom, you know, Harmony, yes. You know, I don't want to be touched, I can take care of myself. So I'm thinking, okay, you're going to be a pretty self-sufficient, ass-kicking female. And then a moment or two later, she's bemoaning her Italian designer pumps, you know what I mean?
Like, well, yeah, because the dude, I guess Dudikoff, rips off her high heel from there, and she insists that he goes to, I don't know, does she say go to Italy and get me like replacements or something? And
something
he cuts her skirt so she can make her way through the jungle more easily, cuts it with his like big Bowie knife, and then ties her skirt around her thighs so she can, you know, maneuver more easily.
But no gratitude whatsoever. You saved my life, but hey,
bitch.
You know, now we're in the water, my hair's messed up. Do you have a comb? I mean, like,
would you rather be garroted by ninjas or like skewered or shot with a machine gun?
So you would think that seeing the colonel's daughter would afford this soldier, you know, a hero's welcome, but it does not.
No. He's disparaged, and they actually malign him using that term exactly. They say, "Oh, here's the hero."
Hero
boy, yeah.
Karate boy. And which brings us to the character of Jackson.
Yeah, I guess, you know, what is it? The dude has he's on the receiving end of opprobrium from his base mates, because his heroism is being cited as the reason that that four or five of his guys were gutted and just killed right there. So these guys hate this fucking
Forgetting
guy.
The fact that they were killed before he even, like,
spoke. Yeah. He's the scapegoat, and then, you know, they start to... He's got a target on his back, and not only are his superiors saying, "Oh, hey, you hero," then all of his private buddies in the dorm or whatever, in the barracks, they say, "Oh yeah, you're Mr. Big Man, Mr. Big Shot."
Yeah, they're calling, you're some kind of tough guy, a karate boy. Well,
yeah.
You're a glory boy. Yeah. Glory boys like you get people killed, and this is a cadre of soldiers led by
Jackson, who's the sergeant, who's really the really incredible, incredibly muscled Steve James. Exterminator and from Vigilante.
Yeah. And there's one scene where, you know, the dude is like, you know, he's shirtless, and the colonel's daughter, her name is Patricia, she's looking at him like, busting her eyes.
He's ripped.
He's got some tone.
Yeah.
Like, compared to Jackson?
No, he's no, nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. So, you know, so our man
Jackson,
Well, I was going to say our man Joe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He has now proved his mettle.
Yeah.
And so
in front of all the privates,
right?
So and who are all, of course, rooting for their Sarge,
right?
Because he's the badass of the group. And then he says, "Everyone thinks they're a badass," or I don't know what speech he gives. Yeah. There's always someone who thinks they're a badass, but they're not necessarily a badass. And
so this, so then we get to the tete-a-tete between Jackson and Joe.
And the
this is obligatory. We need to have this because we need to have the two enemies fighting it out order to then gain a mutual respect.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
So I mean, they have this this
it's got a very corny battle.
Yeah. Now Jackson, I mean, just looking at Steve James, I mean, this guy can take care of himself.
Yeah,
right.
He's built like
and
a brick shithouse.
This poor guy had to like job to like Michael Dudikoff.
Yeah, with a, it's like a head shorter.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, that was unbelievable. And also like I guess at one point during their fisticuffs, Dudikoff grabs like a water hose and he goes, "Oh, what are you going to do with that? Like, play with yourself." I forget whatever you know zinger he throws at him. But then you get this unpalatable image of, you know, Dudikoff choking this black man with this thing and this sort of noose. It's sort of weird.
Yeah,
but then he flings him over his shoulder, gives him all sorts of, like, basically manhandles this giant ex-football player, Steve James.
Mm-hmm. And what about the bucket on the head?
Yes, I guess when Jackson has received, like, several beatdowns, one of the privates grabs a bucket of water and throws it on him to revive him. And he comes to his senses, stumbles to his feet, and Dudikoff puts the bucket on his own head. One of the privates throws Jackson a wooden stick and says, "Hey, hit him, he can't see you." And Jackson tries to wail on his head, and I guess this is part of his training, is from his nebulous background. He, you know, deflects the blow and manages to succumb.
Right.
You know, and knock down Jackson again.
Right, so Jackson, I mean, at this point, he knows.
He's bested.
He's been bested,
yeah.
And he, you know, he grabs Dudikoff's hand and goes, "Joe's all right."
Yeah.
So right away, okay, now we know. All
but this is ridiculous, too, because this is such a highly regarded sergeant in this unit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a bully. Like, he goes after this guy and calls him out and says, "Oh, you're Mr. Karate Boy, Mr. Hero." Like, mm-hmm. What kind of role model is that? He is the worst bully.
He
deserved his beatdown for all his like toothy smile and his charm.
He did have a toothy smile. I was charmed by that toothy smile. But then we got to talk about this is the U.S. Army operating in Philippines.
I mean, for some reason,
what the fuck they were doing in the Philippines in 1985?
Yeah.
Who the hell knows? But there's something very very nefarious going on, right? And there's this Ricardo Montalban-esque villain.
Yeah,
kind of like this French guy, you know, and he
wears like white suits.
Yeah, and he's pretty much in cahoots with
Colonel. I think, yeah, or one of the higher-ranking guys. I think it's some sort of
Sergeant Ronaldo,
who's, yeah, I guess they're involved in some sort of weapons smuggling ring.
Mm-hmm. And what I found quite amusing, endlessly amusing, is that, you know, at one point it's a weapons smuggling ring, and as you said, like at one point he has this potential client that, you know, comes in, and this is the obligatory
compound. Yeah.
And he shows him this is my secret army. It's a whole bunch of ninjas.
Yeah, dressed in yellow and black,
well,
doing all these
say,
like calisthenics.
The whole thing about ninjas, right, is that they're stealthy. They get,
yeah,
you know, they blend in, they dress in black. I mean, these ninjas look like a fucking bag of Skittles. Okay?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Red, yellow,
not
blue,
one green ninja
orange.
to blend into the Filipino jungle,
yeah,
to be found.
Exactly.
And they also, it looked like an Al-Qaeda training camp. Like, they're swinging on these, like, monkey bars and all this. And then he showcases to his future business partner the incredible martial arts kick-assery of the Black
Star Ninja.
Star Ninja.
He's the leader, right?
And it just goes to show, it's much like Star Trek, where they have the red shirts who just basically go to a planet and get, like, annihilated. This guy gives a martial arts demonstration to a bunch of ninjas to, you know, show how great the security force is. And these guys are expendable, too. Like, he beats the shit out of 10 guys, and he takes a stick and, like, snaps the one guy's neck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if they are expendable henchmen, it's still a life. You could still use a henchman.
Yeah.
And there's no sense killing your own henchmen.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's funny, because not only did he showcase his army, he also made a point of showcasing his landscaper.
Yes.
Now, this
yeah,
will come
ridiculous.
Into play.
This is, yeah.
This is ridiculous, exactly. And this
is
reminds
really
me a lot
ridiculous
about a movie we talked about earlier.
Death Force. Yeah.
Exactly. where he says, "This is my landscaper. We found him washed up on the shore. He did not know that the
He's Japanese.
Did not know the war is over, but he takes great care of my, you know, my foliage or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, this is." Remember that, because that's a come to play a bit
later. He should have been involved in like pruning his bonsai trees or something, like for all the cliches of being Japanese.
Well, speaking of funny, because you know,
fish to tend to.
You're referencing the Karate Kid, and I mean, Ralph Macchio in the Karate Kid was a more convincing martial artist than Michael Dudikoff. Okay, just leave it there. And anyway, so yeah, there is this basic plot.
Mm-hmm.
Between one of the high-ranking officials in the U.S. Army, this guy Rinaldo, that looks like it's very, he's got this weird mustache.
Yeah, very Italian kind of looking.
You look very, yeah, exactly.
From like Queens or something.
It's this whole, you know, convoluted plot to, you know, smuggle weapons to God knows who for God knows what reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they got this, like, this loose cannon, you know, this Joe, this Michael Dudikoff, I mean, he's sort of like the fly in the ointment. I mean, what are we going to do with him? And before you know it, they give him this, sort of nebulous detail, and then he's in the brig. He's arrested.
Yeah, I guess they give him some mission for which very few details are described that involves him going out with an army truck to basically get ambushed, essentially. He's just basically sent out in order to be killed. And that's when there's this really insane battle in a warehouse where Dudikoff has to escape through the roof. Mm-hmm. Of this facility. Well, again, he's attacked by a group of about 20 ninjas. And these are about really ineffectual ninjas, apart from the Black Diamond, or what is he, the Black Star ninja?
Yeah, the Black Star. Diamond is a kiss song.
Okay, yeah. Where he's apparently the only guy of his...
Out on the streets for a living. You have to get it started, dude. Anyway.
This guy's apparently, I forget his pedigree, but he's one of the few Japanese guys who's abroad who knows all this stuff about ninjutsu warrior stuff.
Fight the ninja. Taekwondo! Well, Miami Connection callback.
Apparently, this guy, he doesn't exactly have the best staff at his disposal, because these ninjas, not only can they not track down a colonel's daughter running through the jungle in pumps, like, they can't even track down this fucking guy who's trapped in a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And Dudikoff escapes yet again.
Yes, and we gotta say at this point, he does have an ally, and this is Jackson.
Yeah, finally.
Who's doing an investigation and going, you know, why, what's going on here, why is he arrested?
Yeah, he realizes he's being really sent up the river.
Exactly.
Sent up, yeah.
So Jackson smells a rat, and he's starting to realize that something is not quite right, but he feels that if they can talk to the colonel,
everything will be set straight.
Everything will be fine, right? Now, so they go to the colonel's
compound,
Since when does an army colonel live in such fucking opulence? I mean, not only that, he dressed like Ben Gazzara in Roadhouse. I mean, he had, like, the bull tie and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, little do they know that the colonel is part of this whole
scheme,
whatever. And it all comes down to this big martial arts extravaganza, you know, in the villain's compound, which includes so many things that, like, I love. First of all, the dude runs into the landscaper, and the landscaper goes, "You'll calm my mind. They are connected."
Yeah.
Right? And we should say there are flashbacks, right, of, like, the young dude being, you know, trained by this...
by the Mr. Miyagi here.
Mr. Miyagi type figure who is...
Who's the landscaper.
Yeah. So, and...
Well, this is ridiculous, too, because it should be said that there are parallels, I guess, to the Bourne Identity.
The Bourne Identity, yeah.
Where the guy's memory has been wiped clean of his background.
Mm-hmm.
And yet... only certain parts of his memory, because he's been trained from birth to be a martial artist, so he's forgotten all the details pertaining to his upbringing, but not any of the kata or any of his moves that he's learned.
Yeah.
So that's sort of convenient.
How do you know these moves? How do you have these special skills? I don't know. I just know how to do them, you know? And exactly.
Very selective amnesia.
Exactly. Very Bourne Identity. And, yeah, so, I mean... You know, and now the dude is being pursued, and he's being pursued by the nefarious Rinaldo, and at one point...
Yeah,
Rinaldo,
military police who were trying to, like, track him down and arrest him and court-martial him and everything.
And at one point, Rinaldo's jeep goes off the road at very low velocity.
It explodes.
It's like a bamboo and just explodes, you know? Spectacular explosion.
Yeah.
I love it. It barely hit the tree, low velocity, the thing just explodes.
They probably had stock footage of explosions they had to use.
Yep, and at this point now, you know, the landscaper reveals Joe, you know, who he is and what their connection is.
What their connection is. He's his surrogate, like his father figure.
And he rolls out this whole, you know, artillery of ninja weapons. Goes, you are ready, my son. And you are going to now learn the art of ninja invisibility and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we have this great fight, which is great for everybody except for the Miyagi figure, because he just, like...
Yeah, he's gutted pretty quick.
He's gutted so fast. Like,
well, he's an old guy.
He becomes invisible, and the next thing you know, he's got, like, a fucking shuriken in his stomach, and he's dead. But, and then, finally, Yo is now decked out as a ninja, you know? Yes. Like, he's actually got the mask going, and he's, like, you know...
And again, good help is so hard to find, because the Black Star Ninja's conscripts are fucking terrible warriors, and they're just basically there to provide a big body counter. They come after the dude, and he just lays waste to them, and no, you know, and there's bodies strewn about willy-nilly, and that's it. They are useless.
And meanwhile, the big bad, you know, whose name is Ortega, actually, you know, he's calling out the dude, right? And of course, you know, we saw this as Strike Commando, you know, when you call someone out, you call them out by their nationality. American! American, where are you? Yeah. I'm going to get you, American! Yeah. And so we got...
An action film cliche, you have to take a hostage at the end. So, in the helicopter, there he's... What is it, with the... does he have the colonel's daughter at this point? Who was...
Well, before we get to the helicopter, and that's incredible in itself, I mean, the dude is not alone, because then we got another great scene where, like, you know, Steve James comes, you know, driving in, right,
with machine all the
reinforcements,
guns
blazing. Machine guns blazing, bullet bandolier, you know, guns blazing, drums pounding, ninjas are flying,
wiping out ninjas,
you know, dry ice is everywhere, you know, and it's just like, it's just complete martial arts mayhem. Yes, then the bad guy takes the colonel's daughter as hostage, and he's in a helicopter. And this is Ken Excess at its finest. You know, ninjas are throwing fireballs, you know? And the tanks are rolling in. This is B-movie Nirvana.
Yeah.
And then we get one, which is like the money shot in these sort of movies.
Mm-hmm.
The exploding helicopter.
Yeah. Well, and also hanging from the helicopter, which is the other money shot, where you leap forward, and then, like, he was hanging from the helicopter, a la, you know, maybe Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, or whatever, you know, grabs the girl, and then jumps. Like, did he not grab her and jump with her? He did,
but it wasn't like he jumped, because it was like a rooftop that was only about like 2 meters down, so it wasn't that heroic. But.
Yeah. Well, still, you jump from a helicopter, you know? But then of course, the final, bazooka shot at the helicopter, taking it out and taking out the bad guy who thought by this point he'd gotten away scot-free. If we're murky on the details here, it's because, you know, a lot of this stuff is really madcap and really mental, but I think we got it there.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, like, as I said before, this is B-movie Nirvana. This is just, like, you know, like, check your intellect at the door, become a kid again, and just watch it, enjoy it. And then, when all is said and done, we get a reprise of that god-awful, you know, trumpet theme.
Yeah. Not like bugle-themed, you know, military music, but yeah, that god-awful, I don't know, what was that, sort of pseudo-jazz kind of trumpet-going thing? That,
it was bad. It was dissonant. Yeah. It was terrible. It gave me a headache. But anyhow. Dude, I was watching this movie with a grin on my face from ear to ear.
Yeah, it's just hilarious.
I absolutely loved it. I'm going to give it, again, like, you know, objectively...
Two stars. But for sure, you know, entertainment value, 3.5 for
three
sure.
3.5. Yeah. I will admit that, like, I mean, American Ninja was a bit of a hole in my canon, watching...
Experience. Sure.
I had not seen this until I watched it before the podcast. Yeah. I cannot wait to see American Ninja 2, because I hear it's even more batshit insane.
Yeah.
But that might be a future podcast. But I'm going to give this one...
Yeah, 3.5.
3.5 stars.
And, well, what did we learn?
What did I learn? I learned that... it's funny, because at first I'm watching this movie, and I'm going, okay, this is a movie called American Ninja, and you have this guy... And he's not even dressed as a ninja for the entire movie, except for the last 10 minutes, right? So I was going to say, okay,
sure,
you can call this movie, like, just American Fighting Man or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then that sort of, you know, like, it pulled the rug off from me, because then in the last 10 minutes, he did become the ninja. Mm-hmm. I learned that you can join the U.S. Army without any sort of, like,
background check
whatsoever, you know? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I learned that, selective amnesia is a thing. You know?
I learned that the canon guys are extremely tone-deaf to American pop culture, and they sort of pair disparate elements that have no business being put together. Like, you know, again, an army grunt action film paired with attacking ninjas out in the middle of the brush with ambushing rebel warriors. Like, there's no historical precedent for this. There was a weird cultural mishmash. It just, you got the impression there was some focus group where, I don't know, maybe Golan said to, you know, Globus or whatever, like, how great would it be to have a movie with G.I. Joe and ninjas?
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, sure, go, run with it. So that just makes no sense, tone deaf, just
awful. But that's what made...
Like, that's what made canon.
It was so good, because they were like kids in the candy store. It's like, how good would it be if we throw this element, and we throw this element in, and we put this element, we get the dude in there, and then, oh, it's great.
And that's what impressed me as a 10-year-old. This was my favorite film of all time.
Thank God for canon films.
Yes.
We're huge fans. And this is not going to be the last canon film we're talking about on this podcast.
Canon is always a blast.
For sure.
And for more, check out our site, www.reallyawfulmovies.com.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.